The term corporate culture is widely used these days. But can a business really have a culture? How can one differentiate a good culture from a bad one? And more importantly, how can culture in a corporation or a business be improved? Eric Stutzman is the co-author of a new book, The Culture Question. Early on in the book, the authors quote a Harvard Business School article to explain that culture is the tacit social order of an organization. It shapes attitudes and behaviors in wide-ranging and durable ways. Cultural norms define what is encouraged, discouraged, accepted, or rejected within a group. And when properly aligned with personal values, drives, and needs, culture can unleash tremendous amounts of energy toward a shared purpose and foster an organization's capacity to thrive. We often hear about foosball tables and free food as emblematic of culture, but perks do not really define a culture. Stutzman and his co-authors do an excellent job at setting out the priorities that allow for the building and maintenance of corporate culture. We're lucky to have him with us this morning to discuss those with us. Good morning, Eric. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
In the book, you talk about six key elements that really provide for the creation of a culture. Let's go through those quickly and then discuss them.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Would you like me to start kind of naming them?
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, for us, culture, like, it's the way things get done around here, very simply, right? And for us, we feel like if you're going to have a healthy workplace culture, one that allows you to really focus on the operational matters of your organization or your business, you have to get your relational matters right. And what that means for is being able to, number one, articulate and communicate your purpose and values in a way that's meaningful to your team, that your team can relate to. That's number one. Number two, you have to have meaningful work for people to do. Three, your leadership team needs to change its focus towards people. Often, like I said, we're focused on operational things, but we got to focus on our people as well, the relational side of things. And then our teams need to have meaningful relationships so that they can perform at their peak. So building meaningful relationships, creating peak-performing teams. And finally, if a team doesn't know how to practice constructive conflict management, they're going to be lost the first time something goes wrong. So that's the sixth element, practicing constructive conflict management.
And I take it that the principles that you lay out really are applicable to organizations almost regardless of size or what the kind of business is.
Well, yeah, we see it that way. I mean, anytime you have more than two people together, you have a culture. That is the way we do things. You know, you can think about a marriage. You can also, where, you know, you're with your spouse and you kind of know if you say this, they're going to do that. The same thing happens in a workplace where you have more than two people. You begin to build an understanding of the way things operate around here, and you can either do that consciously or unconsciously. And if you're conscious about it, you can mine the power of the group to move your organization or your business in the direction you really want to go so that you can get the results you want.
And one of the ways companies help folks find more meaning in their work, find contentment, be happy at work, is by communicating their purpose and their values. Mm. And I'm reminded, several years ago, I interviewed a CEO, and I asked him a question. He had young children, and I asked the question, what has being a CEO taught you about being a dad, and how has that kind of changed your goals for your children? And he shared something with me. He said, you know, when my kids were first born, my goal for them was eventually to be healthy and happy in life. And he said, you know, I no longer wish for the happiness side. I wish for the finding purpose in their lives. And you talk about purpose. You talk about your young daughter telling you to have a fun day at work. And that kind of caught you a little bit by surprise and made you think about that. What is purpose and why is it so pivotal? Why is it so fundamental to having a positive culture?
Well, that was a wise CEO. We need to do something that matters in life. I mean, one of the things that makes humans who we are is that we make sense of things. We want to have something meaningful. And so if we don't have purpose, our lives lack meaning. And the same is true for our work. If the only purpose of our work is to, say, make money or deliver a service, while that can seem exciting for a while, bad things happen if we don't have a meaningful purpose, that's some way about making the world a better place. And so when you come to work, you might want to go to work and have fun and have the foosball tables and those kinds of things, those perks. And those are nice. I mean, perks are perks. But the reality is, if I can't say to myself, I'm doing something good for somebody, whether it's my person next to me at work or the world in which I serve or deliver my product, but like that, it's that sense of purpose that drives us all, I think, on an individual level, but also on a bigger level. And that's what I want for my kids, too, that, you know, as they grow up, they start to figure out where can they contribute, where can they find a purpose.
And one of the other things that you talk about is the importance of focusing leadership on people. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about different leadership styles and how an effective leadership style can contribute to culture as opposed to ones that do not?
Mm. Well, I mean, there's a lot written about leadership, as you know, and... You know, one of the things that surprises me as somebody that does a lot of consulting for organizations is there's still a fair number of leaders that expect to lay down the law, essentially. This is the way we're going to do things, and if you don't do things, here's the kind of punishment that's going to come, and here's the reward that you're going to get if you do it in this way, which we call, you know, that kind of leadership style. You, in a military setting, is command and control. In a workplace, it might just be the boss, the authoritarian style, that kind of thing. But we see that style, although it gets good short-term results, actually suffers in the long-term. And if you want to have your team actually perform at its peak, you need to have an empowering style of leadership, which is one that more focuses on how do I support my team to work well with each other, to give them the tools they need to do the work that they can do, but also so that they can perform at their peak. And so my job as a leader becomes one, not so much of telling people what to do and how to do it, but more about saying, here is the goal. How can you get to that goal, and how can I support you as a leader to get there? And people talk, another term that people use often is the term servant leadership. How can I serve the people that I lead?
You know, we've had the opportunity to talk to a number of business leaders over the last few years and read books on leadership. I guess my question for you, and you have a remarkable vantage point working with Achieve and consulting with various companies. Give us an example of leaders who you really thought captured that kind of teamwork-oriented leadership style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a number of, where do I go with this? One of my own earlier experiences working in a smaller nonprofit kind of setting where I had a leader who I had done something wrong within that organizational environment. I had not been keeping time well and not working, basically not showing up in the way I should at work. And she took me aside one day, and instead of saying, hey, Eric, you need to show up on time and get work done, she took me out for a coffee. She sat down. She asked me how things were going, and she said, I wanted to ask you about your perception about how much time you're contributing to the workplace and what's been happening on your lunch hours and those kinds of things. And I remember feeling thunderstruck, like this sort of like, oh, my, have I been letting her down? Have I not been showing up? Because truthfully, I was a young person. I hadn't really been thinking a lot about it. But that sort of asking the curious question and prompting me to think did more for accountability than anything else could have. She could have told me to show up and, you know, that I was taking too long a lunch hour and that kind of thing. That would have been fine. But what she did is she helped me be accountable from within, that implicit approach to leadership. And I see that. You know, I see that in a lot of leaders. I work with a bunch of fantastic people who are leaders in their own right, and they do consulting through our organization. And one of them was director of a huge organization here in the part of the world where I live, in my city. And he said, you know, one of the things that I need to do is I need to figure out what each of my people are best at and put them in the place where they're most likely to succeed. Rather than focusing on what they're not great at, I need to focus on what they are great at and make sure that they work well. And that drove all kinds of great results for his organization.
You know, I think people listening to the story can all reminisce about, as you told your story about how your boss dealt with you, mm-hmm. maybe coming in a few minutes late. Mm-hmm. And you kept your respect through that. You felt good about the conversation mm-hmm. as opposed to feeling defeated. And most of us who have worked more than 5 or 10 years have stories like that. We have bosses that have done that. We've also had bosses that have done the other approach. In your book, you talk about the importance of a business leader being easy to work for, easy to work with. What do you mean by that? And how can somebody that's maybe choosing their next step in their career identify an organization and a leader that would be easy to work for?
For me, a leader that's easy to work for is a leader that demonstrates how they care for the people that they lead. Ultimately, like I feel like if I want to work for somebody, I need to trust them. And the quickest way to trust somebody is to know that they've got my back, right? That they care for me as a person beyond just a cog in their machine that is their business or their organization. So I think about like going into work for an organization, one of the things that I want to know is what's your philosophy of leadership? So if I'm being interviewed, I might say, so can you tell me about how you do leadership here? And what's your philosophy and approach to leadership? And, well, you know, how do the leaders here demonstrate their care for the employees that work here? I think those are simple questions, but they're the kind of question that's going to tell you a whole lot. They look at you kind of blankly. you're rolling the dice when you go on. They might be great, but then maybe not so much. Maybe they haven't examined who they are as a leader and what their approach is. So that, I would just ask if I'm interviewing for a position or going somewhere, tell me about your philosophy of leadership. What's your approach? How do leaders build relationships with their staff? Those kinds of questions.
You know, we're running out of time, but before we do, I wanted to give you a chance to at least talk about the part of the book where you explore the elements that you use to transform a workplace. Because, mm-hmm. And can you just touch briefly on how one would look at a culture to try to improve it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, very very simply, I think there's really basically four steps. One, you have to assess where you're currently at. And you can do that through some very simple questions that we outline in the book about, you know, how do you describe your workplace to other people? You can interview your staff about what their experience is of working there. And you can use assessment tools that give people a space to fill in what they're thinking about things in a safe way. And then the next step, of course, is to envision. Like, where do we want to be? What's the relational environment that we would like and the work environment that we would like to have here? What's that look like and what might... what do we need to add in order to get there? What can we build on in terms of our strengths? And then the leaders need to clearly hold that vision, hold that out for people and say, this is why we want to get here. This is why it's important. And begin to share and teach what that culture is. And part of that is defining the organization's values and then making decisions based on those values, very clearly linking decisions to those values, sharing, teaching and holding people accountable in the way I described that my boss held me accountable, helping people be accountable to that vision. And if people don't want that culture, that's fair enough, and then maybe this organization isn't the right place for them, right? So mm-hmm. making some hard decisions along the way as we share and teach the new culture. And then part four is always monitoring that culture. Where are we at? Providing accountability to make sure that we're living into the values and the purpose that we've articulated, the way we want our teams to function. As we go forward. And we always say, and the one thing you should always be watching for are those small, easy changes that you can make now, right? If your CEOs and your leaders don't eat with your staff, change that. Allow them, you know, make sure they have time to get to know people. There's, you know, all kinds of ways you can do that kind of thing.
All right. Small, easy changes you can do now. That's a great way for us to wrap on that. We've been speaking with Eric Stutzman. He is one of the four authors of the book called The Culture Question, How to Create a Workplace Where People Like to Work. Eric, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Doug and Roger.